The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile on Premier Christian Radio. I am Emma Fowle. The Profile is the show where we sit down with a well-known Christian and chat about their life, their faith and their ministry, and hopefully get stuck into a few juicy hot topics along the way. It is brought to you in association with Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. And if you'd like to check it out, then please do head over to premierchristianity.com/podcast for an exclusive half-price subscription offer. On today's Profile, I am speaking with musician and singer-songwriter Corey Asbury. Corey was a worship leader for nearly two decades and part of the Bethel Worship Collective. And his best-known songs, including Reckless Love, have been sung in churches around the globe. And, by his own admission, made Corey a lot of money. But a few years ago, Corey left the Christian music industry and has since been releasing country music. And in this fascinating interview, he openly shares some of his own story and explains more about why he felt that he could no longer profit from making worship music. Now, you might notice that the audio quality in the first few minutes of this conversation is not quite what it should be, and we do apologise that the internet connection to Corey affected some of the recording. It does clear up, though, so please do bear with us. To get started, would you just give us a little overview of your own spiritual journey? Did you grow up in a Christian home? Did you make a commitment to Jesus at some point? What does your faith background look like?
Yeah. So my parents got saved when I was like 5 years old. And, you know, so it was kind of just, okay, may as well do the same, right? So yeah, said the prayer, 5 years old. So it was kind of like, you don't really know what you're doing at 5 years old, right? It's like,
No. It's
not really, not that it's not real. When I got into my teen years, I always loved music. It was my connection to God in a legitimate way. So I would, it's weird, but I would be like going nuts and I'd wake up, you know, still hungover from the night before, and I'd go to church and I'd sing or play or do whatever. It wasn't until I moved to Kansas City, my parents basically, they told me it was a music school. It was not, in fact, a music school. It was a Bible school. Teenage years, I'm going wild in the worst ways possible. And again, my parents know that I have this love for music. So they find this place in Kansas City that they tell me is a music school. And they're like, hey, we'll pay for you to go to this music school if you agree to go. And I was like, all right, I'll fill out the application. Like, they're probably not going to accept me. I have no qualifications whatsoever. And so I fill out the application and they accept me. And I'm like, oh, dang, this is tragic. So my mom drives me from North Carolina to Kansas City. And again, I'm thinking this is a music school. So I show up with my guitar and I get there and they're like, yeah, this is a Bible school. and you're going to sit in this place called the prayer room for 8 hours a day. And I was like, yeah, just kill me now. Like, go ahead and end this. This is terrible. So I hated it for 3 months. And again, you know, I grew up in the church. Like, I knew what it was about, but had never really met God, like never really encountered God. So I'm there for 3 months and I'm absolutely hating it. I'm rebelling. I'm not going to classes. I'm not doing anything. I'm taking all these people down with me. and then about halfway into a 6 month program, I'm in the middle of a class and this dude named Corey Russell is teaching. He's speaking about, I don't even know what, I wasn't paying attention. And all of a sudden he just goes, Holy Spirit, we invite your presence. And in an instant, I'm like crying. Like, I'm just weeping. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I have no context for what's taking place. A lot of people around me are doing the same. And I'm like, what is happening? So I just kind of start saying to God, like, hey, is this you? Like, and if it is, what is taking place right now? And I didn't hear him. It's weird. Like, I didn't hear him audibly say it, but I like felt him in my heart, I guess, or my spirit or something say it. And he said two things. And the first was, I've seen everything you've done. And That was a scary thought for me. Yeah. I was like, uh-oh, like this is not good. Like, this is bad. You know, it was a real fear of the Lord kind of thing where I was like, oh, dang, I might be cooked. Like, I might be done for right now. And the second thing, I'm just sitting there crying like, oh, no. And kind of repenting a little bit, but kind of just like not really knowing what to do here. And the second thing I heard or felt was, and I still love you and I still want you. And I was like, dang, okay, that's different. Like, only people I've known in my life, like my parents, my dad, he knew what an idiot I was, and he treated me the way that I deserve to be treated. And here's God, you know, telling me, I know what a dummy you are, and I know the things that you've done, and I still like you. And I was like, okay, this is different. So I just sat there weeping, crying, and I was repenting my head off and just trying to think of all the bad stuff I'd ever done and try to get it out, you know. But that changed everything for me. That changed my heart completely. And I was like, wait a sec, if this God in heaven likes me when people around me didn't even like me because they knew what I was doing, this is a completely different order of love and affection. So I fell in love with worship and with being in that prayer room, even though I hated it before. And that kind of set up the trajectory of really the rest of my life, kind of planted me in just love for the scriptures, love for worship, love for the presence of God. And, you know, I've hopefully continued to follow that path the next, you know, 20 years or so.
And then at some stage you moved to Bethel and became part of the Bethel Music Collective. How did that come about? What was that like?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We never lived there. But when we were living in Colorado Springs, which was probably about 7 years after we were in Kansas City, Anna and I, my wife, had met. We'd gotten married. We had our first kid there. Gabriel, our only son, was born there in Kansas City. He's 15 now. So we had moved to Colorado Springs to take this position at another church there. And it was great. But in the midst of that, I went out to Reading to mix a record for my buddy. I had this connection with this guy, Luke Hendrickson, who was in Kansas City with me, who had moved to Reading and was running their web stream, like their live stream. He does all the audio for it. So he was going to mix this record for my buddy, Jonathan Moose. We flew out there together. And while I was there, Brian Johnson and a guy named Joel Taylor were like, hey, we heard you're in town. Will you come and lead worship at our Sunday night service tonight with Stephanie Gretzinger and Amanda Cook? And I was like, no. Like, I'm here to just be chilling. Like, I'm here to receive. Like, I lead worship 6 times a week. Like, I don't need any more of that. Let me just like receive. And they were like, no, we really want you to lead. Please, will you do it? And I was like, all right, like if y'all are serious about this, okay, let's do it. So I show up and I led worship with those guys that night for their Sunday night service. And right after they grabbed me, they were like, hey, can we talk? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I figured, you know, I'd screwed something up, or, you know, I said something I shouldn't have said or something. I didn't know what was going on. But they were like, man, we love you. We love what you carry. And we really want you to join Bethel Music label. And I was like, whoa, okay. Like, that's wild. That's different. I didn't expect that. But, you know, they were very important at that time. Bethel was pretty big entity in the worship world at that time. Some of our friends, Jonathan and Melissa Helser, who wrote No Longer Slaves and some other songs that you'd probably know, they had just joined Bethel Music maybe a couple months before that, something like that. And Anna and I had always loved them. So we had literally said, like, a couple weeks before, like, how crazy would it be if we joined up with Bethel with Johnny and Melissa too? Like, that would be amazing, right? So I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, this is amazing. So went back home, told Anna. And like I said, we ended up joining Bethel Music as a, you know, a label or a worship entity or movement, whatever you want to call it. We never lived there. We lived in Colorado Springs, yeah, that whole time. And it was interesting we were like the only ones that didn't live there. Everyone else lived there. And it was kind of nice because we didn't have to deal with the drama. We'd just come in and they'd throw parties and stuff and then we'd leave.
And you've written some pretty big songs there. Most people will know Reckless Love, which is your most famous song. Tell us what you're doing now and tell us how you shifted out of Christian music. Tell me what labels you put on what you have done and do. Because I always find this question really interesting when speaking to. I had the privilege of interviewing Amanda Cook last year, actually, at a festival in Cornwall. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, do you call yourself a worship leader? Or like, how do you label what you do? Because I find it a really interesting question to ask musicians who work in the Christian sphere, in the church. Like, it's quite complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's interesting. Your vocation doesn't necessarily have to be your calling or who you are. And that's kind of the way I think of it. I've always been a full-time vocational worship leader or pastor, you know, since I was 19 years old at IHOP in Kansas City, right? Until maybe 5 years ago when we moved to Nashville, I was always full-time at a church leading worship. Like that was my job. So since we've lived here, I've not been full-time at a church. Like we go to church and I bring my family and it's great and it's glorious and it's restful and it's amazing not having to wake up at 5 a.m. and do sound check. You know, I show up at 10 a.m. or wherever it starts and I just find God. It's amazing. But who I am at my core, still very much, you know, my mom prophesied over me since I was a little kid, like you're a Levite. This is who you are. This is what you're made to do. Meaning you're made to be in the house of God. Like that's who you are at your core. And I know that because I love the presence of God. Even though I don't lead worship full time, I've always got my guitar in my hand. I'm always singing. I'm always writing. I'm always, you know, worshiping God in some way, shape, or form. So recently, you know, since we've lived here, I just kind of said, hey, I'd love to learn from the Nashville world and sit with some of these songwriters and these artists and these folks in this kind of slightly adjacent but slightly similar industry and just flex that muscle and see if I can do it, you know, see if I can write those songs. And it's been really fun. And I really love the country world because their excellence level in songwriting is just off the freaking charts. Like they're the best songwriters I've ever been around by far. And I granted worship music is vastly different from country music. The hooks are different. The lyrical format and layout is different. Like the way they turn phrases is different. You don't really do that in worship music. You kind of say the same thing over and over in worship music because it's supposed to be accessible. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be corporate. And if it's too complicated and too wordy, the people in the church are like, oh God, I can't, you know, I can't sing along to this, that kind of thing. So I understand it. Like that's super pragmatic, but there's something to just digging in and trying to write a great song. For the sake of a song, you know, that there's something beautiful about that. So I just kind of wanted to delve into that and see if there was anything there. So I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, I Corey doesn't do worship music or Corey doesn't do Christian music anymore. Because the truth is, like, I love all of it. And I'm actually writing finally for a live worship record right now. And I've been gathering all the, you know, what's the word? Usual suspects, to write this record with me. And we'll go and record it probably the end of this year, beginning of next year. So I've not like left that behind, but for me, there was a lot of consternation in my heart over that part of the industry, which seemed really gnarly and dirty and weird and all about money. And then I was seeing people's lifestyles in it. And I was like, I'm not down with this. Like I come from leading worship in a room to zero people. Like it was never about a big stage or about money for me. I guess I got lucky, you know, with Reckless Love and it ended up doing what it did, but that was never my intention. And I think once I got in it and saw how sort of trying to think of an antiseptic or like a nice word for it. Once I saw how interesting it was, I was kind of like, yeah, I don't want anything to do with this. And so that was a lot of the impetus behind, hey, let me go do something else. Because
so
I was conflicted.
This sounds very like you're basically saying you left the Christian worship music industry for the secular music industry because you felt that it was better, like purer, like more.
Yeah.
Which is that what you're saying? Mean,
not necessarily, but I hear myself saying it and I can hear you understanding it that way 100%. And I think that's been a bit of a narrative for sure. There's truth to it. There's a measure of truth to it. I think for me, it was a conflict in my soul of making money on worship. You know, I think that was one of the few things that really pissed Jesus off, you know, was in the temple. Obviously, the money changers were saying to all the lay people, hey, he's not going to accept that sheep or that lamb. It's not the purest. So come to my place. I'll switch out the money. And then your worship will be accepted. So they're taking this big commission off of normal people trying to worship God the best that they can. And Jesus was like, no, we're not doing this. It's like, let my people worship in simplicity, in truth, in honesty, in, you know, in a lot of ways, in its lowest common denominator, let people just show up with the best that they have and let that be okay. And all these religious leaders of the day were like, no, you got to have a better offering and you got to, you know, your money's no good here. Switch it out. And then they were taking money from these regular people, these, for lack of better terms, poor people coming in trying to worship God. And I think that really pissed them off. So I look at it and I go, am I profiting off the gospel and off worship? And to me, the question always is, what's the heart, right? What's your intention? I know my intention, but I don't like the intention of what I see in the industry. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, I don't mind, you know, Sam Hunt, Thomas Rhett, Morgan Wallen, you name the country singer, making money off of a country show because they're saying, come and get entertained. Come and enjoy a show. Now, I got all these worship entities, you fill in the blank, I won't say them, saying, show up to my night of worship and pay $120 for front row seats. I'm not good with that. I don't resonate with that. That messes with my spirit personally. So for me, it was like, I can't be involved in that because it feels too much like those money changers at the temple. It feels too much like the purity of it has been lost. And then people come into a songwriting room going, I know that I'm going to make money on this song if it blows up on CCLI, meaning if it blows up in the church, there's a ton of money to be made. And so people come in with that intention. They might not say that, but they come in with that intention. And for me, it was like, no. Like, I'm not going to have anything to do with that type of thing. So I got zero qualms writing a country song and then telling people to come out and, you know, see a show like that, because one of my heroes is Rich Mullins, and he would say, you know, if you want church, if you want edification and all that, go to church. It's free. Don't come to my show. If you want entertainment, come to my show. And you'll find God along the way. It's amazing. But, you know, that to me is a much purer direction of heart, I guess. So that, you know, take that how you will, and, you know, people can do the same, but that's what it was for me.
I mean, you actually went slightly further than that on social media and said that you knew people that were no longer believers that were writing songs for the big worship collectives, hoping that they would make money off it, which I think that most Christians would find really shocking.
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, to me, again, like, you and I both know, I'm speaking of issues of the heart, right? I'm speaking of matters of the heart. So I can't necessarily go into someone's psyche and soul and tell you exactly why they're doing stuff. But I can analyze their lifestyle and I can see their behaviors. And then I can make suppositions from that place. And I think it's easy to see why certain people are doing certain things. And I think my point in saying any of that is it's not always perfectly pure. But the truth is, God has been using not perfectly pure since the beginning. And that's the beauty of it. And I think that's what I had to surrender to and go, I can't fix this person. I can't fix this industry. I can't fix these people's lives, though they come to me and ask for help. I can't change them. I can't make them any better. I can't make myself any better. And at some point, you just have to go, okay, God can still use it. The offering doesn't have to be perfect. Hopefully, it's coming from a good place in the heart. And I think that's the only thing Jesus ever cared about, right? The Sermon on the Mount, he's like tearing all those old ideas to shreds. You've heard it said that, you know, if you sleep with blah, 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 then you've blah, 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 blah. And he goes, no, no, no. Even if you've looked at her to think about sleeping with her, you've done it. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I tell you, love your neighbor. You know, so he goes at the heart in all these different ways. And so I think that's what I'm always after. Like, I want to pay attention to the heart, and I want to pay attention to why I'm doing things. And that's the only thing I can affect. That's the only thing I can change. Am I frustrated with a lot of it? Absolutely. You know, and it's okay to be frustrated with those things, but the only thing I can change is me.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky, isn't it? Because there is that tension. There's that part that's where Paul says, I don't care for what reasons or what motivations people are preaching the gospel as long as the gospel is preached. There's also the harder end of those accusations, like all the scandals we've seen in recent weeks with Michael Tate, where you kind of go, well, you're not just perhaps making assumptions about what's going on in someone's heart. You can actually see bad behavior and things that are unacceptable happening in places where they really shouldn't happen, where people need to speak out. Someone needs to say something. Someone needs to say this cannot be allowed to keep happening. For no other, I mean, it's the least of the reasons, really. The reason is people have been really hurt. But, you know, even with just the casual stories of drinking cultures backstage and worship leaders getting up to things that the person who has paid money to stand there and worship and sing songs with that person would never imagine was happening. For me, I'm like, that's heartbreaking for the Christian community. That's heartbreaking for the church. And it shouldn't be allowed to continue. And people shouldn't be allowed to make money out of that. Can it ever be fixed? What can we do about it?
It's a question I wrestle with every day. I mean, the truth is people are people. You know, the Tate situation is obviously different because there were things taking place that were not necessarily legal, I guess, now that we see these things coming out. So when I say what I said about him, what I meant was everyone knew that he struggled with homosexuality. Everyone knew that. No one knew that there was sexual, I mean, I won't say no one, maybe some people did. I certainly didn't know that there was sexual abuse taking place, but everyone in the industry, everyone even outside of the industry knew that he was struggling with homosexuality 100%. Now the struggle is something I have grace for. Just like when you name the worship leader is struggling with alcoholism, I have grace for that. When we've given into it and we just say, you know what, who cares? I'm just going to do this. I'm going to show up to the show drunk. I'm going to, you know, in Tate's or someone like him, his case, I'm just going to do these things that I shouldn't be doing sexually, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not cool with that, but I don't have a way to fix that. I cannot change people. All I can do is hopefully provide an example of what it looks like to walk in integrity. And I think that's what we all want. We want integrity. We want the same behind closed doors as on the stage, right? And that's what I fight for daily. That's what I fight for in the industry daily. Because I think that's important to the listener. And the listener is not privy to any of that information that you just shared. And I think, honestly, there's beauty to that sometimes. They don't know the garbage that's taking place. So they can listen to that music in purity and hear God, and there's nothing in the way. There's no obstructions, etc. So I honestly, I don't know how to fix it. I pray and I ask God to purify his temple in the industry, and I hope that he does what he does. But again, he's been using broken people for a really long time, and it's not necessarily his stamp of approval on their lives. But the scripture does say the gifts and callings are irrevocable, and so people live these lifestyles and they expect that it's God's stamp of approval on their life because it's still anointed, it's still making money, it's still successful. That's not the truth, but I can't step in and fix it. And if it's not something specifically that I'm seeing with my own eyes that is illegal, I can't go and be a whistleblower. You know, like everyone was all pissed off. Like, why didn't you tell the world about Michael Tate? I was like, bro, I'm not friends with Michael Tate. I don't know Michael Tate. I've never spoken 10 words to Michael Tate. I just know he's gay. That's it. And so did everyone else. I didn't know what was taking place behind closed doors. No one did. You know, maybe there were some people that did, and that sucks that they didn't say anything. But unless you're seeing it, you're videoing it, you know, like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to take that? I don't know how to approach that really well. I know how to approach it within my own sphere and within my own players, my own team, my own guys. If something's going on in their lives, I address it because I'm friends with them. I know what's going on. If things are taking place in my camp that I don't like, that I think God is not pleased with, I talk to that person about it. I've got no connection to other people in a meaningful way where I can sit down with them and say, hey, bro, what you're doing is not cool. Now, if they come to me and they say, hey, this is going on, which happens a lot, I could say, hey, that's not cool. Like, you need to chill out on that. Like, that's not going to pan out. Usually it's just not going to pan out for you and your family. And God will deal with the rest of the details, but it's tough. Like, I don't know how to fix it. I really don't. All I can say is we pray. We ask God to get involved, and sometimes he exposes it and sometimes he doesn't, because I know a lot of folks who are still really popular who have stuff that has happened in the past that is not great. God might expose it. God might not. I don't know. It's not my call, because it's not illegal and I don't have to, like, you know, report it to the authorities. It's just like they're doing dumb stuff. I don't know.
It is tricky, isn't it? And I think part of it, like you say, is that sort of lack of accountability. I think that's maybe what some people struggle with the Newsboys thing, because you're kind of like, how can you be in that intense an environment touring with someone for that long and be a living together and not see and not address and not challenge? But it is a very difficult lifestyle, isn't it? The touring musician. And if you're, you know, we were talking about it within Premier, like, it's a different setup even from Christian leaders, because within a church setting, you at least have maybe a leadership board or an eldership or whatever, that there are you're in one place every week and you're with the same people. And even then it goes wrong sometimes, especially for those with a lot of power and influence. So like, how you do that when you're on the road all the time and you're not in regular church and you're moving from one venue to venue. And you also, I think maybe we find it quite hard to understand here in the UK, because the industry doesn't exist in the same way. We don't have the size of sort of Christian market as you do in the States. But from what we see, it looks very close, comparable to secular fame, like levels of money and all of that kind of stuff. So that must bring its own challenges, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, people aren't made for that. No one's made for that. No one's made to carry that weight. You know, it's not a thing that we were created to do. Glory was not supposed to be ours.
So how do you do it within your own team and within your own life, Corey? What are the mechanisms you put in place to make sure you never end up in that situation where someone's writing a scandal story about you?
Yeah, really close friends who are around me all the time. You know, really close friends who are not around me all the time that I can call, if things are going on. So, I mean, our team, we're around each other all the time. I think there's a lot of times this elite culture that takes place within, our world, where the man of God is always off doing his own thing. He has his own place. He has his own bus. He has his own, hotel rooms. He has his own whatever. Like, I room with my guys all the time. And I don't know, you know, that could also be weird to some people, but thankfully for us, it's not. But you know, there's a lot of accountability in that. Like, when we're on the road, we're all together all the time. I think there's this thing that takes place where people put themselves above question and above all accountability. And it takes place, you know, within the church with pastors as well. No one can question anything that you're doing or saying. But for us, it's just transparency all the time. Put everything on the table. And if you see anything funny going on, address it. We'll talk about it with the team, you know. I think that accountability and that, like, we're always around each other no matter what. you can't even be in the, you know, the bathrooms, the shower rooms alone with most of the venues that we're at. Like, it's just public. Like, it's just wide open. And I guess for Tate, that didn't work out real well. But, you know, for our crew, it's actually helpful because you kind of have no privacy. You have no alone time unless you take a long walk or something. But I think that's a good thing. In a lot of ways, and just knowing that we can call each other on anything at any time. No one's above the law. No one's the man of God. And I've got, you know, my production manager with me everywhere I go. And I think that it's a safeguard in a really helpful way.
And you also said on social media a little while ago that you felt that using social media to promote yourself was antithetical to the gospel. Would you explain that, what you meant by that to me? I mean, because you, let's face it, you are someone who's on social media quite a lot. So what did you mean by that statement?
Yeah, I think, first of all, go back to the idea of the heart, right? Everything's about the heart. I know a lot of folks go on there and they want to promote all the good deeds that they're doing. And, you know, you got all these people who are videoing every, oh, I'm praying for this guy and I'm healing this guy and I'm doing this and that. And I get that there's utility to that. But at the same time, I think the heart gets lost a lot. And it becomes about building a brand and building a marketing plan so you can sell more tickets and merch and make more money. I think there's nothing wrong with telling people about your music. Hey, you know, I got this song coming out, because I guess that's being a good steward of your time and energy. But when it comes to just building your own kingdom, your own legacy, I'm doing this so I become greater and everyone knows the Corey Asbury brand and what it looks like and what it sounds like and all these things, I'm just like, come on, man. Like, and the truth is, I think we build a lot of theology out of necessity. And we go, well, I need to tour 200 days a year to make my lifestyle work and to make money and to take care of my family. So I build this theology that it's good to do that and to market myself and to constantly video everything that I do. That's BS, man. That's absolute garbage. You watch the life of Jesus and he would heal and he would preach and he would do all these things. And what did he typically say to the person after he healed them?
He said, don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone. Part of that was self-preservation because he was going, I'm not ready to die yet, basically. Right? Because if all the people that he healed started saying, this dude healed me, the Sanhedrin and all these leaders at that time would have been like, get this guy out of here. So part of it was like, hey, I'm not ready yet. But the other part was like, I don't need you to build my ministry. He could have had hundreds of thousands following him around everywhere, but he often withdrew to lonely places, right? That's what the scripture says. He wasn't concerned with building a platform or a ministry. He didn't take offerings. He didn't pass around the collection plate. He didn't build the Jesus brand. You know, if nowadays someone went around with even similar power to Jesus and they could heal someone, they'd be doing the I just healed this guy's leg conference, you know, 2 days later and monetizing and building merch about a leg growing out, and which is absolute BS to begin with. But, you know, it's like, I think we've lost the heart. And that's my point. If you want to tell people about your music, tell people about your music, but But don't do it with intention of building your kingdom. Do it with intention of hopefully helping someone with that song that you actually cared to write to actually help people, or to offer encouragement, or to alleviate anxiety or depression, or just provide a general sense of levity or joy. I got a lot of value for that, but that's not what I see in all our culture nowadays. It's about marketing yourself. You are branding yourself. It's not your music or your song, or here, I have this offering for people. Humbly, I'm going to offer it to the world. It's here I am, Corey Asbury, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm, whoever. You name the person. They got their little things. And I'm like, I'm just so turned off by that. And I do believe, truly, marketing yourself is antithetical to the Bible. I make a slight distinction between marketing your music and yourself. And some people are going to go, that's not real. That's not a real distinction. Great. Have fun with that argument. I could care less. I know what I'm saying is do things for the right reasons. Stop putting yourself on a pedestal. Stop marketing your good deeds. Like, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. We love videoing ourselves when we're giving to the poor and we're doing all these things. And look what I just did. Don't freaking tell people. Like, just live your life. Like, be okay with your reward being in heaven. Because what Jesus would say is, good, you've got your reward. Enjoy people liking that for about 5 minutes. I hope you liked it, because it ceased to exist now.
And I think we're never going to see a social media video of you on mission then anywhere.
No.
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 Absolutely not.
No, that's, I really can't stand that stuff. And I understand that it's helpful to some people, because they're like, oh, I saw, you fill in the blank. I saw them doing that. I was so inspired. Awesome. Be inspired by that person. My conviction is I'm not going to do it.
Is that one of the reasons you keep your social media quite lighthearted?
Yeah, I think levity is important in this day and age. I think comedy is important, because comedy pokes fun at the things that are taking place in culture, and it has a license to poke fun at the things that are taking place in culture. Think of the jesters of old, right? Like, you, this is some England kind of vibe stuff. Like, we got the king where he's got his jester coming in. His jester's poking fun at things in the community. He might even poke things about the king that no one else could do. It is his job to do that. And it raises the question, should we be doing this? Should we be thinking about life this way? Think of satire, like the Babylon Bee cracks me up. But it's such a succinct way of pointing out maybe a flaw and asking the question, should we be doing it this way? Rather than writing an essay that no one's going to read, doing a 4-hour podcast breaking down the problems of the world, I can make fun of something in 15 seconds and you know exactly what I said. You know exactly what I meant.
I particularly liked your recent video poking fun at Christian songs that try to suggest that anxiety might be something that God's just going to miraculously zap out of the sky with a thunderbolt.
Yeah, right? It's like,
I mean, I'm not explaining that very well. You're going to have to go on his social media and look it up if someone's listening and is interested. It's very funny.
You did great. So here's the thing. Like, I could have sat and wrote a super somber song about it, or I could have written an essay that took me 2 days and then people read it and it took them an hour to read. Or I could just write a stupid little satire song with auto-tune, and everyone goes, that's funny that the church believes that you can just go, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo, all of your anxiety is gone in the name of Jesus. Like, I'm sorry, sometimes it works like that, but for the vast majority of folks, it doesn't work that way. And the fact that we shame people for having depression and anxiety in church culture and say, you can't, you can't take a medication to help you. You better plead the blood of Jesus. And if it doesn't work, just deal with it for the rest of your life. I'm like, y'all are silly. And you need to know that's silly. And the best way to say that in the shortest amount of time is to write a stupid song about it.
So I'm guessing, you know, you get a fair amount of pushback from people on some of the things that you say.
Fair amount would be a large understatement.
Have you just got very thick skin? Has it never bothered you? Does it bother you sometimes?
I mean, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, so I love just destroying and tearing things down and reforming. Like that's who I am. So yeah, I do have really thick skin, but I think I'm fine with people saying like, God's love isn't reckless. That video was stupid. Like, I disagree with your take on anxiety. But what's happened recently that I don't love, that's actually kind of taken a toll, is your character is flawed. You are a heretic. You are evil. You're a wolf in sheep's clothing. Your family is garbage. You know, these types of comments where I'm like, wait a sec. This is a whole different level of disparaging. This is character-driven assassination, not just, I disagree with your take and I think you're a moron. I'm fine with that. Like, say that to me all day. I could care less about, you know, opinions on theological takes, whatever. Enjoy it. Like, I could care less. But it's become, he's sent as a wolf in sheep's clothing to lead people astray. He comes from IHOP, which is evil. Bethel is evil. They're all false ministries dealing with false gods and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, y'all are actually clinically insane. Like, this is wild. So that's been kind of annoying lately, especially, you know, you said you've watched a couple of the videos. Like, I am pretty unashamedly myself. And that's not to say, like, just be yourself. Like, just, you know, be an a-hole no matter what. Like, that's not my point. But when I am myself and it becomes misunderstood and it becomes, he's sent to, like, you know, take down the Christendom, like, with his takes, then I'm like, that's a different level of misunderstood, because I'm genuinely being myself. People would rather me just post like some stupid graphic of like a cheesy scripture taken out of context, or like the perfect veneer of a human being. They prefer that because they're not provoked by it. They're not ruffled by it. They prefer these other guys, you know, because their social media is super palatable and easy to digest. It's not me. I'm not a company man. I never will be. Say what you want to about it. But when it becomes like Corey is evil, then I'm like, all right, guys, like, come on. Like, I'm fighting for truth and integrity and vulnerability and honesty here. And I'm getting raked over the coals for my take on Michael Tate because I said everyone knew. I'm like, everyone knew. Okay. Like, why are you saying I'm complicit? Like, you guys are crazy. This is the worst take I've ever seen. But, you know,
it's something. Does it ever affect you? Does it ever get to you? Like, does it ever upset you?
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Does it make you think, I don't want to be on social media anymore, or I'm going to shut up, or?
Yeah, no, I've decided a wholesale change. Like, it got to the point where I didn't want to open my phone. And even if I wasn't looking at social media, people were sending me, my friends or my group threads were sending me the comments or the articles or the Christianity Today, my, you know, Corey Asbury complicit in Michael Tate scandal. And everyone just cares about headlines and clicks, and that's all they care about. They don't care about human beings anymore. So yeah, I have all apps off my phone. I don't touch social media. I don't run anything as of 3 weeks ago. All my social media team does everything. I film and batch content, you know, and they run everything, because I couldn't handle it anymore.
I hope this means it's not gonna get really like tame and boring though, Corey. Please tell me no.
It will. Yeah. I mean, I'm weighing everything right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's too steep a price to pay to have people misunderstand satire and have radio stations call and say, we're taking Corey's music off because he said, you know, whatever he said. Like,
wow,
people are
happened.
Too unintelligent to understand satire. And I pay the price for it. So yeah, that's definitely happened very recently. And that's kind of why I'm like, it's not worth it. You know, like, I'm not meant to change the world. I'm not meant to disciple the world via social media. All I can do is change the people that are around me. All I can do is affect them. The rest is up to God.
That's sad though, isn't it? Because that's part of the problem. Everybody gets silenced and nothing changes. And it's sad bummer. When that happens within the Christian community as well.
It sure is.
So let's talk about CCLI and okay, let's put it this way. If you had a blank slate and you could create a Christian music industry that does all the good stuff, what would it look like? How could we, I'm not saying we can fix it. You already said you don't know how to fix it, but like, is there a way to take the good and leave the bad? Or is it just not possible? Because CCLI was invented for good reasons, wasn't it? It was so that worship leaders actually could earn a living. And, you know, as someone who has earned a living as a worship leader for many, many years, surely that's something you're on board with.
I'm definitely on board with it. But I think what happens is, as with anything, money corrupt. Fame and accolades or fortune or whatever, they corrupt. And that's a bummer because it becomes no longer about the pure reasons we got into it, right? People see that it makes money and then they go, oh, dang. You know, it's the old adage, like, revival makes money. And then money kills revival. I think that's an accurate statement. It's tough. I mean, you can't change the industry. You can't change the way it is. You can only hope that people do things for the right reasons and maintain this right here and know that you're doing it for the right reasons. And the second that you're not, be done or find a way to repent and change.
Do you miss leading worship at all?
I still do now and then, but just not in a not in a vocational, like it's my job. I'll just show up every 3 months and lead a set at the local church that we go to here in Tennessee, and it's wonderful, it's amazing. But like I said, it's mostly at my house. I got my guitar, Anna and my wife and I are singing together, or we'll have church at home sometimes, Sunday afternoons, and we're just singing songs that I've written or songs that are simple that we love together. So I still do it. I just don't really do it like full time in a super forward facing way anymore.
That was Corey Asbury speaking to me, Emma Fowle, here on Premier Christian Radio. And if you enjoyed this conversation, you can listen to many, many more by downloading the profile as a podcast from wherever you normally get your podcast from, or visit premier.plus/theprofile.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.